Okay, good morning. Boker Tov. Welcome back to Parsha Perspectives for today. We have the privilege of learning and reading Parshas Vayechi. If you're following inside in the Yard Scroll Stone Chumash, page 268. As always, we begin with our attitude of gratitude and thank our dear friends Becky and Avi Katz and family who sponsor our learning in memory of David Grossman. Shabbi Lo'ila Nishmas, David Ben Menachem Manish. This morning's shir is dedicated anonymously for the Refuah Shleima of Rav Natanel Ben Miral. Should hear, please God, good news of a complete and speedy Refuah Shleima by Esther and Elliot Kasavsky, commemoration of the first Yeretzad of Esther's mother, Leah Chana Bas Yeshayahu. May her neshama have an aliyah. And please God, for a Refuah Shleima of Ron Ben Sara undergoing a procedure, we should hear good news. Please God, should bounce back speedily with a complete Refuah Shleima. Parshas Vayechi, the curtain's coming down on Sefer Bereishis. This is the end of our formation as a family, and it's been a rocky road. Been much of a roller coaster, a story of alienation, a story of tension, a story of sibling rivalry. Sefer Bereishis has been replete with challenges of coming together as a family. And therefore, significantly, Parshas Vayechi, the curtain comes down, and hopefully it seems in some ways we have corrected, we've repaired a lot of that damage, although perhaps not entirely and not completely, as we'll talk about and we'll see, we continue in other ways to suffer from until today. It's not lost on us that notice I didn't say help yourself to coffee or slushy or pastry from the Reb Shai on the corner, because today's Asar B'Tevis, today is a fast day. And why are we fasting? We're fasting, of course, Nebuchadnezzar, Ezra, there's so many reasons associated with this date on the calendar, but they revolve around the destruction of the Batei Mikdash, the beginning of that siege, what began that process that culminated and ended in that destruction. And why did it happen? Why has it not yet been rebuilt? Because we're still suffering from the original cause of the story we're reading. The animosity, the enmity, the brotherly hate, the marginalizing, the condemnation, the sinas chinam, the baseless hate that began it all. While the curtain comes down and we've corrected and repaired to some extent, we continue to suffer from it. And that's why we read the story of the Asara Harugei Malchus, both on Yom Kippur in the form of Slichos, on Tisha B'Av in the form of Kinos. But we recount the story of the 10 martyrs. They did not live contemporaneous to one another. 10 great rabbis who were tortured and killed. And the Medrash Eicha, the Gemara Gittin, tell us that in heaven, what happened is that our Roman enemies called for a tribunal, a court. And they said the brothers, they never were accountable. They never were punished for the sin of selling Yosef. And therefore a trial was held. The brothers were found guilty. Of course, they were no longer alive. And therefore, the 10 great rabbis of the generation representing the brothers were put to death. And notice nowhere do Chazal say, one second, that's an inaccurate and an unfair conclusion to the trial. Why should the brothers be found guilty when in fact, there's a reconciliation? Yosef forgives. All's well and good. The curtain comes down and kumbaya, everybody's in love. So why are we saying the story of the Asara Harugei Malchus? Why were those 10 martyrs killed altogether? So Rabbeinu Bachaya addresses this question and he says, if you look in our parsha, if you see the way the story ends, while on the outside there's forgiveness, while superficially there's reconciliation, internally, clearly, there's still hurt and there's still pain. The brothers, after their father, spoiler alert, in Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov dies, after Yaakov passes away, the brothers, suspicious of Yosef, come to him and say, why, what are they worried about? Yosef was on his best behavior while their father was alive. But they're worried. Now that Abba's gone, now Yosef's been waiting, biding his time. Now's when he's going to get even. So they come and they say, by the way, Yosef, Abba said to tell you that even after he's gone, you shouldn't do anything to us. And this is devastating to Yosef. And why is it devastating to Yosef? Yosef knows it's not true. And how does Yosef know it's not true? Because heroically, Yosef never told his father what happened. Yosef was never alone with his father. In all those years, they were reunited. And why did Yosef avoid being alone with his father? So his father would never say to him, by the way, where were you? What happened? How'd you disappear? 22 years, why didn't you send a message? In order to avoid having to try to answer that question or not, he wasn't alone with his father. Yosef went to superhuman effort to protect his brothers. And they lie to him when they say, Dad said to tell you, don't do anything to us. And Yosef cries hysterically because he realizes that on the outside, he's in. On the outside, he's now one of them. But on the inside, there's something that's still missing. And Rabbeinu Bachya says that's why that trial happens, and that's why we are fasting today, Asara B'Teves. That's why we're still fasting all these years later, because we're still suffering from that malady, from that cause called Sinas Chinam. That's why we'll begin Sefer Shmos next week, when we'll sit down at the Seder soon enough, and we'll dip that karpas, and we'll remember, why are we dipping karpas? Why are we dipping the parsley? Or why are we dipping the celery? Or if you're from Elizabeth, New Jersey, where I just had the privilege to speak in memory of Rabbi Teitz's 30th Yahrzeit, you're dipping banana. Whatever you're dipping in the salt water, why are you dipping it? Rabbeinu Manoach in his commentary in the Rambam says the word karpas comes from ksonas pasim. We're dipping the coat in the salt water because before we can celebrate leaving Mitzrayim, we have to remember how we got to Mitzrayim. Before we get to the part of the Seder where we celebrate, we're free, we've been redeemed, we've been liberated. Before we celebrate Geula, we have to remember why we were in Gullus. Why were we in Gullus? We dipped the karpas, the ksonas pasim, that multicolored coat, in the salt water as if dipping it in the blood in order to remember how we got there to begin with. And in many ways, we're still there. We're living in Gullus and we're seeing the pain. We're seeing anti-Semitism. I flew up on Sunday to give that talk and I was at the gate about to board with my father, both of us proudly wearing our yarmulkes, and a man walked up. This was wild. No yarmulke, not visibly Jewish at all. And he leaned in and he whispered. He said, I'm also Jewish. I said, okay, it's nice to meet you. He said, I see, you know, you wear the kippah in public. How's it been? Are you being attacked with anti-Semitism? And we had a whole discussion about it. Whoever thought in an airport in South Florida, Jews would have to whisper, I'm Jewish, what's it been like? Are you suffering? We are deep in the darkness still of this Gullus, certainly outside of Israel, even in Israel, where there's the beginning of Geula and the return to our homeland. But when seven countries are waging war on you simultaneously and Israel is still seeking permission to be able to respond to ballistic missiles and a nuclear threat, we're in Gullus all over the globe, including Israel. And this reminder, why are we here? How did we get here? Just like we got there to begin with. Because of Sinas Chinam. That's Asara B'Teves, and that is our Parsha. So Rabbi Sachs, and I'm reading to you not at the introduction to, so if you're looking at the Rabbi Sachs Chumash, I want to throw you off a little bit. But on page 350, when he's talking about how Yaakov assembles his family around him to give a bracha, Rabbi Sachs writes so beautifully, Yaakov blesses his 12 sons. His blessings to the eldest three sons, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, read more like curses than blessings. There's discernible tension here. Yet, the fact that he's blessing all 12 together in the same room at the same time, we have not seen this before. There's no record of Avram blessing either Yishmael or Yitzchak. So first of all, Rabbi Sachs said in passing, something we've spoken about in the past, which is these supposed blessings read more like curses. Yaakov is rebuking his children. You're too impetuous. You have no patience. You get angry too easily. He's giving feedback and criticism, constructive, but to his children. And the Torah calls that a bracha, a blessing. What kind of blessing is that? He's, so to say, telling off his children. That's a blessing? That's a blessing? The answer is yes. When you care enough to correct. Unlike the parenting in our time, the helicopter parenting and the bulldozer parenting and the trophy, participation trophy parenting, where every child is perfect, every child is excellent, every child is amazing. I shouldn't say this publicly because I see my mother walked in, but we were talking this past Shabbos with my children. I was remembering what it was like when report cards came and how I rushed to the mail to preempt getting rid of them before my parents got them, because you may find it hard to believe I was not a good student at all. I was not a good student at all. And we're talking about what it was like parent-teacher conference night. I remember that even though I stayed up late every night and had to fight about my bedtime, I was never, ever my entire childhood awake once when my parents came home from parent-teacher conferences. Somehow that night I found a way to be fast in a deep sleep before they got home. Because those were the days when parents came home from parent-teacher conferences and they, perhaps, not my brother or sister, but me, perhaps approach the child to say, we've got to talk. Today, who's the one who sitters about parent-teacher conference? Not the children, the teachers. Who's the one who wants to avoid the feedback and the rebuke and the criticism and the wrath of parents, not the children, but the teachers. So what's the evidence? How do we demonstrate we love our children? Not when we tell them they're perfect, they're amazing, they can't do any wrong. How could it be that my child is not exceeding expectations? How could it be that my child is not a superstar getting straight A's? How could it be my child didn't win the award and the trophy? But when a parent says, you're amazing and I love you and Hashem loves you and you have so much worthwhile in you and I want to build up your self-worth and self-esteem, and the way to do that is to tell you what you need to work on. That's what Yaakov teaches us in our Pasha. Because the blessing, the bracha, it is a bracha to have parents who can tell you with love and affection, I admire, I love, I appreciate, but here's what you need to work on. I share it with love as a parent who loves you unconditionally and wants what's best for you. That's a bracha. To tell your child they're perfect, they have nothing to work on, everything's the teacher's fault, that's a parent who's a klala. That parent is a curse to the well-being and future of the child, and that's a critically important lesson from our parsha. I just paid a shiva call. A member of our community lost a brother last week. He just got up from shiva, and he was one of 15 children. His mother from Iraq was one of 18 children. And I, of course, paid a shiva call wanting to hear about the brother, but I said, really tell me about your mother. She raised 15 children? How? And they're all incredibly close and loving, and the older take care of the younger. How? And he shared with me the most remarkable. She grew up in Iraq at a time women maybe weren't even incredibly educated or illiterate. She didn't read books or write books on parenting, but she intuited and she knew a Jewish mama. She knew how to raise her 15 children. And he described, because she knew and she loved everyone and respected and treated as they needed. And she would describe, this brother, this sibling couldn't stand fish. So when he came home, she didn't make fish, not the smell of it. This one loved liver, always had liver waiting. This one, she'd say to the siblings, he's in the army. He needs a little extra attention right now. And therefore, don't be upset if I'm focusing on him. She communicated the differences and knew what every child needed. He told me that the most rowdy of the siblings, who was a smoker, one day they look outside and mom is in the backyard having a cigarette with this sibling. He said, you don't smoke. She said, yeah, he needed to feel connected, to feel vulnerable. I wanted him to feel comfortable. So I had to say, I'm not endorsing, I'm not encouraging. It was a different time. But ad kedei kach, that's Yaakov Avinu. Because that man also told me that his mother told him, you need to work on your anger. You need to improve on your patience. She showered with love and affection, which gave her license to also say, here's what you need to work on. That's Yaakov Avinu. That's our Pasha. But Rabbi Sachs continues. There's no record of Avram blessing either Yishmael or Yitzchak. Yitzchak blesses Esav and Yaakov separately. The mere fact that Yaakov is able to gather his sons together, unprecedented and important. In the next parak, the first of Shmos, the Jewish people for the first time described as a people. It is hard to see how they could live together as a people if they could not first live together as a family. The Torah is giving us an unexpected message here. The family is prior to all else, to the land, the nation, politics, economics, the pursuit of power, and the accumulation of wealth. Let me say that again. We have Sefer Breishis before Sefer Shmos, because before we could become a nation and a people, the family comes first. The family is prior to all else, to the land, to the nation, politics, economics, pursuit of power, and the accumulation of a wealth. And I'll add, it's when we forget we're a family, when we stop functioning and loving and caring as a family, then we lose all else, the land, the nation, the politics, the economics, the power, the wealth. From an external point of view, the impressive story is that Yosef reaches the heights of power in Egypt. The Egyptians themselves mourn the death of his father Yaakov and accompany the family on their way to bury him. So the Canaanites see the entourage and say, Egypt is endorsed deep mourning. But that is externality. When we turn the page and begin the book of Shmos, we discover the position of the Jewish people in Egypt is very vulnerable indeed. And all the power Yosef had centralized in the hands of Paro will eventually be used against them. Bereishis is not about power. It's about family, because that's where life together begins. This book then ends on these three important resolutions. First, that grandparents are part of the family and their blessing is important. Second, Yaakov shows it's possible to bless all your children, even if you have a fractured relationship with some of them. And third, Yosef shows it's possible to forgive your siblings, even if they've done you great harm. That, surprisingly, is what Breishis is about. Not about the creation of the world, which can be described in a single chapter, but about how to handle family conflict. As soon as Avram's descendants can create strong families, they can move from Breishis to Shmos, and their birth as a nation. That is the essence of what this book is about. How to function as a family. How to stop going and being a dysfunctional family. I say every year, what is the definition of a dysfunctional family? Any family with more than one person in it. And yet, we have to learn how to go from that into being a fully functional family. And we try, imperfect. As I said, the curtain comes down, Rabbi Bechaya, imperfect. But we get closer, and only then are we ready for Sefer Shmos. Halakach v'alibov Rav Avner Shor's new Sefer Nezer, a parsha on Bereshis. Rashi here writes, Lama parsha zu stuma? Because the way the parsha begins, Vayechi Yaakov Eretz Mitzrayim, let's start. Vayechi Yaakov Eretz Mitzrayim, Shva Asrei Shonav Yimei, Vayehi Yimei Yaakov Shnei Chayav, Sheva Shanim V'Arbayim Hashanim. Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim 17 years. The days of Yaakov, the years of his life, were 147 years. Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamus. It's time. Yaakov anticipates, he feels, he's heading towards his demise. Vayikra Lav Noli Yosef, he calls Yosef, Vayomer Lo, swear to me that you'll do chesed ve'emes with me and that you won't bury me in Mitzrayim. Swear to me that you're not going to bring me and lead me to the land of Egypt. So this parsha is Vayechi Yaakov, is Susuma. This parsha is unique. There's no space between it and the preceding parsha. Ordinarily in the text, if you look in a Torah scroll, you'll see that there's a gap. There's a space. Sometimes the line ends and the new paragraph only begins on the next line. Sometimes paragraph ends and the new paragraph begins on the same line with a space. Those are called psuchos and stumos. There's a space. Why is there a space? Our rabbis tell us, this is when Moshe says to Hashem, I'm processing, I'm thinking, I'm considering what you just said. There's an incredible lesson even in that, a lesson which is lost on our generation in our time. We don't give ourselves that space. We always have noise and activity. We're always engaged. We never just stop and think. We never allow ourselves the space and margin to process, to absorb, to contemplate, to think. Moshe did. That's why those spaces are there. But Parshas Vayechi is unique. There is no extra space between the previous parsha and this. In contrast to the general rule, it begins a new line. Here, it is stuma. It just continues straight. Why? Says Rashi. Lama Parshas is stuma. Shekivin sheniftar Yaakov Avinu nistimu einayim v'libam shal Yisrael mitzaras hashibud sheeschilu l'shabdam. Because once Yaakov Avinu dies, once he leaves this world, the eyes and the hearts of the Jewish people are closed from the pressure and from the persecution of the subjugation in Egypt. Our eyes and our hearts were closed because we began to suffer. Azai Zakt Rashi, that's how Rashi explains why this was stuma. Why is it closed? Because Yaakov Avinu's eyes, when Yaakov left this world, the Jewish people's eyes and hearts became closed. The Sefer Nechmad V'Noim quotes Rav Shor, Mefarsh Devei Rashi Bavan Mechudash, Ki Yadua Divrei Chazal, Ein Avali Behem Treisir Suri Avera. We know the two ways that the Yetzirah, the methodology of our alter ego, is Ayin Ro V'Lev Chomed. Our eye sees, and then our heart covets. Our eye sees what our neighbor has, and then our heart gets jealous and envious. Our heart sees something, and then our eyes see something, and then our heart desires it. As long as Yaakov was alive, Yaakov inspired the aspiration for Kedusha. Yaakov modeled and motivated what it means to live a life, purity and sanctity and holiness and meaning and purpose. So that our eyes and our hearts were closed. That all of us were living, as our rabbis tell us too, with our eyes down and our heart up. Our eyes down and our heart up. What does that mean? We don't see bad. Even as we're engaging, even as we're experiencing the physical world, our heart is up. Why? Because we're connecting heaven and earth. We're connecting the physical and the spiritual. We are able to transform and elevate that which is mere material into something, a vehicle of holiness, all in the merit of Yaakov, because he taught us and he modeled it for us and he inspired it, like the righteous do in every generation. We see the way they engage food and speech and time and everything physical. Afsham Be'ervas Ha'aretz. And Yaakov taught and inspired, even down there, even in the morally corrupt, decadent Mitzrayim, even the place of moral decay, the Ervas Ha'aretz, we can still protect our eye and our heart. We can still have a moral compass. We can still regulate ourselves. However, Achar Petiras Yaakov Avinu, Haisa Sakana Gedola. After Yaakov died, and we lost his example, and we lost his inspiration, and we lost his light, we also lost the will and the way how we would continue to behave, to regulate our eyes and our heart, to not be drawn in and after that which would sabotage and that which would destroy us. And that's when the Shibud came. Because when we assimilated and integrated, when we walked like and talk like an Egyptian, when we acted like, when we were confused, and when we became corrupt in understanding truths and axioms, moral boundaries and behaviors, that's when the Shibud Mitzrayim, that's when the servitude came. Mufarsh Stima Zui Lamal Yusa, Shanistimo Ayim Valev Lashoman Betahara, Yesh Lahasmich Likan, Masha Omar Rebbe Kadosh Mikotsk, the Kotsk Rebbe, the Chassid of the Kotsk Rebbe would tell his followers, his students and disciples, he said, Ritzono mehem hu shelo yechtu lo rak machma sha'asalachti. He said, I don't want you to not misbehave only because it's wrong to misbehave. I want you to not misbehave because you have no time and no will to misbehave. Shelo yelam panai belev lachto. V'zeh inyan shatzaras hashibud. Shelam panai lachto. So now we understand as well, says Rav Shor, another question the Beis Yisrael addresses, which is, why here and why now? Why here and why now? If this all happened and kicked in after Yaakov dies, why does Rashi begin the Parsha with this idea and lesson, with this insight? Offer it after Yaakov dies. That after Yaakov dies, tell us that Nistamoy name Shal Yisrael. Why does it appear here at the beginning of the Parsha? And here the Beis Yisrael and others of Shur elaborates, develops the idea. You know why? Because the 17 years they had Yaakov in Mitzrayim, when you have mochen de godless moments of inspiration, bottle it, package it, capture it, so that you can continue to draw from it. We spoke about this 2 weeks ago. Yosef's great insight, Parshas Miketz, when he interprets Paro's dreams, what was true physically in the 7 fat years you have to set aside so you can continue to live off of it in the thin years, is also true spiritually. In the moments of spiritual inspiration, bottle it, capture it, so that you can draw from it even when you feel down and out, even when you feel uninspired, even when you feel disconnected. When you have what I'll call high-speed moments, bottle it, capture it, so that when you're later buffering and trying to connect, you're still able to find the inspiration. And that's why it appears at the beginning of the Parsha and not later into it. The Meshech Chochma wonders, Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim 17 shana. Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim 17 years. Madua Torechas HaTorah Lahadgesh Yaakov Chayes Oshen Shanim Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Why? We know Yaakov came down. That's where he was headed. That's where he was going. That's where he was. The end of last week's parasha, he's already communicating with Paro and Mitzrayim. They've set up camp in Goshen. They opened the Beis Medrash. Yaakov is there with his whole family. So why do we have to be reminded where he lived out his last 17 years? We know where it is. And where is it? Mitzrayim. So the Torah doesn't have extra words. Why does it tell us, Vayechi Yaakov, he lived those 17 years? Where? Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Why do I need to be told that? So, and what is the Meshech Chachma asking? Interestingly, in the last pasuk of Parshas Vayigash, where does it tell us that Yaakov lives? Go back one page. Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz Mitzrayim Be'eretz Goshen. So the last pasuk of last week's Parsha is Yaakov's living in Goshen. We begin this week's Parsha with, he lived out the last 17 years of his life. Where? In Mitzrayim. Why the shift? Why the change? Number one. Or possibly the Meshech Chachma was bothered by, maybe. The second way to understand it is, we know that it could have said, Vayechi Yaakov b'Mitzrayim. Why the word Eretz? After all, in a moment he's going to say, don't bury me in Mitzrayim. V'nasasani mi Mitzrayim. Why do we have the extra word of Eretz? Says the Meshech Chachma, Ha'inyan, Sha'adam yesh echad shtei, Ha'adam yesh echad shechai la'atzmo. There are people who live for themselves. The only influence, the only impact, the only legacy they leave is about themselves. Yeshachai le'iro. And there are other people who, they leave a legacy in their city, in their town. They're synonymous with all the good things that happened there. That person didn't just live for themselves, but their legacy is the community, the town in which they lived. Yeshachai l'chol ha'olam. And there are people who had a national, an international, a cosmic influence. V'yalzeh nemar tzadik yesod olam. That the tzadik is the foundation of the whole world. Shagam bein ovdei Hashem ha'amitim nitin l'havchem behevda mahusi mizbatei v'ramas ha'ashpa shalama sviva asam. V'kecho shedargas ha'aruch nishalodin gavoa v'romemes yoser kach pe'ulos ha'osos lam k'nafayim v'madbios ha'schos man al anashim rabim yoser. The greater a person is, man or woman, the more impact, the broader an impact and influence they have. So there are people, they live virtuous lives for themselves, private and modest, and they live for themselves, and they're virtuous, and they're righteous. And the Meshech Chochma writes even about them, Gam Zeh Tov, that's also good. Someone who lives a meaningful, purposeful, virtuous life for themselves, also good, also wonderful, also a worthy legacy. But a little bit higher is the person who impacts their community, who transforms their city, their town. And then there are people who, even bigger than that, leave a bigger and a broader, a more powerful legacy. As I said, I just had the privilege of speaking about Rabbi Teitz on his 30th Yahrzeit. He was such a person. And in that talk, I talked not only retrospectively, passed away 30 years ago, about his legacy back then, but prospectively, as a charge, what does it mean for Rabbanim community leaders today? What can and should we emulate? What is our mission and what are our responsibility and how can we walk in his footsteps? And he was someone who wasn't satisfied just with himself or with his community, but who had a much bigger and broader impact. The Yaakov Avinu says, the Meshech Chochma, lo b'iro levad hayecha. He didn't just live for his city, but lo b'eretz Goshen levad, rak b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. He impacted the entire Egyptian empire. Shepasak harav mi'Mitzrayim, the famine ended in his merit. Aval kaved zeh le'Mitzrayim, v'lo be'eretz Goshen b'levad. It wasn't just Goshen. When he died, v'yechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. At his levaya, the hespedim, the eulogies at his funeral talked about that Yaakov left a legacy and an impact. Princes and princesses and prime ministers and presidents and mere citizens of Mitzrayim knew that any blessing that they had came because of Yaakov, who lived in their midst. V'yechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim. Says the Meshech Chochma, that's why Eretz Mitzrayim, because that was Yaakov's impact. Okay, we're going to skip ahead. I want to make my way towards the second half of the parsha. Yaakov is sick. He calls in his children and calls Yosef, Menashe, and Ephraim. You know, we have the story, the episode. He's blessing Dafka through them. Perek Memches, Pasuk Tes Zayin. Top of page 272. What's the bracha? Vayvarach Yosef Vayomar, Ha'elokim asher shalachu avosai lefneichem. He gives a bracha to Yosef, and he says, Amalach ha'goel osim yikorah, yivarach asan oran, vayikorah b'hem shmi, v'shem avosai, v'hom yitzizrak, v'yidgu larov, v'kerev ha'aretz. May the angel redeems me from all evil, bless the lads, may my name be declared upon them, the names of my forefathers, Avram and Yitzchak, may they proliferate abundantly like fish within the land. We said this last year, so I won't repeat it, but vayivarach is Yosef. On the one hand, there's a promise. I think we said this last year. If we didn't, I'm not repeating it. But vayivarach is Yosef. He's giving a bracha to Yosef, but we don't see the bracha to Yosef. Who is Yaakov talking to? Menashe and Ephraim. So why does the pasuk express it as vayivarach is Yosef if the bracha is to Menashe and Ephraim? So we said last year, I believe, because what's the greatest bracha you could give a parent? That their children be blessed. It's not mutually exclusive. It's not a failure to bless Yosef. The biggest blessing to Yosef is to give a bracha to his children. And what is that blessing? Hamalach, we're familiar. I won't sing it because some of you are struggling to stay awake as it is. So I'm not going to sing Hamalach and further put you to sleep. V'yidgu larov v'kerev ha'aretz. Says the Tefer Shmuel. It's going to be a heavy Tefer Shmuel day. Says Rav Shmuel Berenbaum. Still making our way through. Why v'yidgu larov v'kerev ha'aretz? What is the bracha? May you multiply and proliferate like fish within the land. Why fish? Says Rashi, Kidagim alalu, Shaparim v'rabim, v'ein ayin hara sholatas b'hem. Because fish live in the water. Fish live beyond what we see with the naked eye. And because they are protected from and avoid ayin hara, that's why they successfully promulgate, proliferate. That's why they multiply in multitudes. And therefore, the bracha to Menashe and Ephraim, the bracha that we give our children and grandchildren, that we ask for ourselves, is to both be protected from ayin hara. You see from here that ayin hara is not a modern concept. It's not just a new age concept. There is a indisputable concept of ayin hara. What does it mean? Not what we ordinarily think. And one thing I know that won't protect you from it is a red string around your wrist. That's just idolatry. That's darchei amori. Red string around the wrist is an excellent good luck charm. You know for whom? The woman on the steps down to the kotel who sells it to you. It's a tremendous skula for her. For you, it does nothing. It's a tosefta. The tosefta calls a red string around the wrist darchei ha'amori. It's idolatrous. It's foreign. It's not what we do. It's not what we believe. It's not how we behave. And so we don't believe in it, but we do believe there's a concept of ayin hara that comes up in halacha. Maybe we'll talk more about it another time. Not for now. But Rashi here says that the fish are the example of the blessing because they live beneath the water. Therefore, they're not exposed to ayin hara. Says of Shom Berem, Isa Mesechet Brachos, the Gemara Brachos tells us, Amar l'Rabbanu lo kamastafi mar be'ein abisha, Amar lu anam izar di Yosef kasina, v'lo shilta be'ein abisha. So the Rabbanan say, you're not vulnerable to ayin hara? So he answers, I descend from Yosef. And Yosef, no ayin hara could touch him. Dichziv ben puras Yosef, ben puras alei ayin. Amar avavo, al tikrei alei ayin, ela olei ayin. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Amar mehacha, just like the fish in the sea, the water covers them. When we identify with, when we act like Yosef, just like Yosef was protected from Ayin Hara, so too are we. Yosef, whose eye did not crave or look at or pursue what did not belong to him, so too, no one else's eye and eye can rule over us. Rashi says, Ole ayin, mesulakim in ayin she'en ha'sholetes b'hem, sh'lotz lozom, l'hanes me'esha es adonav. So it says, Rav Shmuel Berbam, hatam she'zacha Yosef sh'lo yish lo b'ayin hara, mida k'neged mida, she'shamar einav me'lehanos me'riyos asuros. Yosef did not look at what he was not supposed to look at. Yosef was filtered. Yosef was careful. He shomer anayim. L'fichachu nishmar mimisha mistakel alav b'ayin hara. If you're careful what you look at, you'll be protected from people who shouldn't be looking at you. V'ayim meseches yuma. Omar alav Yosef atzad b'chol yom v'yom hayeishes potifar mishtadalso b'dvarim begat shalav shabo shachris l'lav shalav arvis. The wife of Potiphar was consistently and ruthlessly pursuing and propositioning Yosef endlessly. She was constantly changing her wardrobe to be provocative, to catch his attention, throwing herself at him and on him. And with all that, despite the endless wardrobe changes of Ashes Potiphar, like someone at a Pesach program, despite her changing, but Pesach program appropriately, dressed appropriately. I'm just saying the number of wardrobe changes like someone at a Pesach program with a child in Shidduchim. That amount of wardrobe changes was the amount that Ashes Potiphar did, only she wasn't wearing appropriately, not for a Pesach program, not for anywhere or anything. And yet, despite her ruthless, perpetual, promiscuous propositioning of Yosef, Yosef didn't look, he didn't touch, he didn't take, he wasn't tempted by that which was not his. Shelo rak shelo avar avera, it's not just that he didn't violate the avera, afilo lo histakaba. He would turn his eyes down, he would look away, he wouldn't even gaze, he wouldn't even give a moment of a glimpse of that which was not his. V'nimtza shemishirot alinatza me'ayin hara. So you want the skula to be saved from ayin hara, says Rav Shmuel Berenbaum? It ain't no red bendle around your wrist. That's easy. How many people wear the red bendle around their wrist? come late to shul, talk all davening, look at inappropriate things on the internet, gossip, lashon hara, have ruthless business practices, and they think, well, I spent 5 shekel, now my wrist is protected. No. If you want to be protected from ayin hara, yishmor einav meri'iyos asuros, umida keneged mida yizke leshmira me'ayin hara. Don't look at what's not yours. Don't look at images and ideas. Don't look at what's in someone else's driveway or pocket. Don't look at the people in their home. Don't look with jealous and envy at others. Don't look at things you shouldn't be looking at. And when we can protect what we look at, then Hashem protects us from those who might otherwise look at us. You see this with Bilam HaRasha. Vayisa Bilam Asena Vayaris Yisrael. Bilam lifted his eyes and he saw the Jewish people. Vati Alav Ruach Elokim. Rashi says, he lifted his eyes. Bikesh L'Hachnis Bem Ayin Hara. Bilam stood on the mountain, and how is he going to bring down the Jewish people? Because he was going to bestow upon them Ayin Hara, the evil eye. He would look with jealousy and envy. He would invoke divine judgment. Hariyesh L'cha Gimel Midos of Ayin Ra. And that's one of the 3 qualities of Bilam, to look with an Ayin Ra. But when he saw that, Shochein L'Shvatav, when he saw that, Koshev V'Shevet, Shochein L'Atzma V'Inam U'Ravim, he saw that the Jewish people, everyone in camps on their own, they're not intermingled and they're not mixed. They're protected and they're living lives of Kedusha and Tahara. And more than that, Matovu Alecha Yaakov, he saw our tents don't even face one another, so no one can give a peek. Nobody's a creep. Nobody's looking into one another's bedroom or through the window. When Bilam saw that we were a people who were careful where we look, how we gaze, how we live, then he was unsuccessful in giving his Ayin Hara to us. So you see from our parsha, you're looking how to be protected from Ayin Hara. Here's how. When we're careful what we look at and how we look, then we are protected from how others want to and seek to look at us. Back to the Nezer HaParsha. Number 2, V'yidgul harov b'kerev ha'aretz, will multiply like fish b'kerev ha'aretz. Rashi says, k'dogim alalu, excuse me, like these fish, sheparam v'rabim, who multiply and the Ayin Hara doesn't affect them. Why are we compared to fish? Because the fish in the sea is covered, so too are we. But more than that, the Gemara continues. Kevin sh'olun yabasha. What happens to a fish that flops onto the land? A fish that finds itself on the dry land, what happens? Miyad mesim, dies immediately. Where's its natural habitat? What's the environment it needs to be in order to live? The water. Af b'nei adam kevin sh'poshim yidivrei teira, u'min ha'mitzos miyad mesim. Where's our natural habitat? Where's our environment that sustains us? Torah. We need to be immersed in Torah. Just like the fish, when it goes from the sea to dry land, it'll die immediately. A yid, if it went from the sea of Torah, the sea of Talmud, and it lived in a dry land, dry, absent of Torah, we're outside of the environment we need to live, miyad mesim. Says Rav Shor, this was the appropriate bracha Yaakov was giving, specifically in Golos. Because the Sifte Tzadik says, the fish live in the water. Mikom akum, a fish in the water, Chazal tells us the Medrash Bereishis Rabbah, what happens when it rains? You can see it. Go to the Lago Lake. Go to the Captiva Lake. When it rains, even though the fish are already in the water, what do? They swim to the surface, they stick out their mouth, and they try to catch a drop. They lift their face, they open their mouth, and they're trying to catch the drops of rain, even though they're in the water. And that is the way we're meant to live, that even though we're immersed in the sea of Torah and Talmud, but nevertheless, when it rains Torah, we should be so eager to collect it, we're sticking out our mouth. Where is it? Where? B'kerev ha'aretz. Aretz, whenever you see the word aretz, it's a hint and an allusion to the idea of artzius. What's artzius? Material, physical, the base, mundane. Even when we're living b'kerev ha'aretz, we have to go to work, and we have to go to the supermarket, and we have to go to the mall, and we have to wait online, and we have to eat, and we have to sleep, and we're mere mortals, material and physical, and engaging the limits of this world. Nevertheless, we could stick our head and our mouth out. Nevertheless, we could drink up every drop of Torah that's falling. Even when we're bekerav haaretz, This bracha is given specifically in Galus, Bekerav Haaretz, Bekerav Haaretz. The bracha Bekerav Haaretz is Gematria Sheker. Bekerav Haaretz is the same numerical value as Sheker. Osam Shem Tzrichim L'Stoviv Ba'Ama D'Shekra, even when we have to operate and navigate around a world of lies, which is exactly what this world increasingly is. It is a world of distortions and untruths. It's a world of lies. It's harder and harder to tolerate, to not have our hearts be broken in living and navigating this world of lies. Habrachi sheyuchu lachis chayim v'kayamim v'lo yunoflim l'mata yidin esyonis hakashim. And that's why it's a bracha to be like dagim, bekerav haaretz. Lo dagim shei meisim miyad, rak sheyech b'yicholosim lachis gam bekerav haaretz. Not like fish who die immediately, but the fish who can live bekerav haaretz. They live even bekerav haaretz, even while we're living in that place, we can still drink and live Torah. That's our natural habitat and environment. That's where we can still live even while we are there. As I zakt the Nezer HaParsha. Okay, Perek Memches, Pasuk, Yud Tes, same page. Vayimayin Aviv. So what happens? Now it's time for Menashe and Ephraim to get the bracha, and Yosef lines them up correctly. Menashe is the older one on the right, the more prominent spot. Ephraim is the younger one on the left, the less prominent spot. What does his father do? The old switcheroo. Switches his hands. Vayimayin Aviv, Vayimayin Yadati bin Yadati. Gam hu yela'am, gam hu yigdal. Ulam achiv ha-katon yigdal mimenu, v'zari yemalo ha-goyim. And Yaakov switches his hands. Why doesn't he switch where Menashe and Ephraim are standing? Why does he switch his hands? Switch where they're standing. It's a big lesson about parenting there, but not for now. And he and Yosef have a difference of opinion. Yosef protests. He says, Abba Tati, respectfully, but you got it wrong. Menashe's older. And what does Yaakov respond? Yadati bini, yadati. I may be old, but I'm not stupid. I know. I know Menashe's older, but... And Menashe is also going to be la'am. Gam hu yigdal. He'll also be great. But achiv hakaton yigdal mimenu. His younger brother, he's going to be a rabbi and a doctor. V'zaro yeh malo agoyim. And his offspring are going to fill the nations. His offspring are going to be even greater and fill the nations. What are they debating? I don't want to take the time now. We've spoken about it in the past. Cosmic debate between Yosef and Yaakov about Menashe and Ephraim. Who's in the position of prominence? Who's higher? Who goes first? Slonim Rebbe and others see it as a debate between which is more important, Sur Meira or Aseh Tov. Menashe ki Nashani Elokim is Sur Meira. Ephraim ki Ephrani is Aseh Tov. Which is more important, to leave the bad or to start doing the good? Do we first eliminate our shortcomings and mistakes or take on more positive practice and virtuous behavior? Sur Meira or Aseh Tov, what's the order? Many ways of interpreting and many ways of understanding. But says the Teferes Shmuel, says Shmuel Berenbaum, Tamu Hare Yaakov Avino Yebetzar Meshech Chof Beish Shanim Mimichiris Yosef. He asked a great question here. And I think, frankly, respectfully, his question is even better than his answer, but I want to pose his question to you. Yaakov was in horrific pain for 22 years. Chronic pain, inconsolable mourning. Why? Alienated from Yosef. Yosef disappeared. Yosef was nowhere to be found. How did that happen? What started it? Favoritism. Favoritism. Because Yaakov favored Yosef and he gave him that coat. So now after 22 years of separation, Yaakov's in Mitzrayim and 17 years, which were the best years of his life. Some ask, how could his best years of his life be Davke in Mitzrayim and Galus, not in Canaan? It's a question again for another time. The best years of his life. And now he stands to potentially ruin it all again. He's about to repeat the same mistake. He favored Yosef over his brothers. That's what began it all. And his 22 years of suffering. And now he's giving a bracha to Menashe and Ephraim. And instead of following the natural birth order, he says, no. Ephraim, ooh, he's special. He's going to be great. Menashe, he's good. He's good. He's going to be accomplished. He's going to do his thing. It's good. But Ephraim, ooh, Ephraim, that's my true pride and joy. Ephraim's my geshmak and nachas. Ephraim, wow, is he going to be a gadol? Is he going to be great? Says Rosh Shmuel Berenbaum, what is going on here? Didn't Yaakov learn his lesson? You're not supposed to show favorites. There was an article in New York, the article last week, in a paper we don't say, in shul, in front of an Aron Kodesh, or even outside of it. Someone forwarded me the article. God forbid I don't pay for it, and I wouldn't give it clicks. But someone sent me the article. And the article was about research on favoritism from parents. Fascinating. You know how all parents, when asked by their children, do you have a favorite, say no? Well, the research showed that most are lying. And that even if they claim, and even if in their heart they don't believe they have a favorite, in practice, often, children are treated differently, and one or more might be seen as the favorite. And the article, very sadly, spoke about that the other child or children who perceive they're not the favorite, there's a high correlation between poor mental health, feelings of insecurity and unworthiness, struggle later in life with feeling that you were not the favorite. And what parents need to do and how to behave and how you avoid that to raise all healthy children, fascinating article. But it's a real issue. It's a real thing. And here Yaakov seems to head right back in that direction. How could he? Why did he? So Rosh Hashanah has an answer, and he says, no, with Yosef, it had to do with material things. You can't favor your children by giving one or some more than the others. So they never should have given Yosef the coat. But here it's not a thing. Here it's covet, it's honor. And here Yaakov has no choice. Lamaisa, says Rosh Hashanah, covet HaTorah demands it. If Ephraim is going to be greater in Torah, then Yaakov has to display and demonstrate the greater covet HaTorah, the greater honor for Torah. So yeah, where did Yaakov learn his lesson? Because where did he go wrong? Don't give more things to one than the other, but to give more honor. So like I said, respectfully, I think his question is much better than his answer. But what's the answer? Why would Yaakov repeat the mistake, repeat the cycle? How could he, why would he supposedly get it wrong again? I'm interested to hear what you have to say. Perek Memches, Pasuk Chaf, bottom page 272. I got to leave you, you know, with something, some homework to do. Vayivorchem bayom ahu leimor. So Yaakov gives them the bracha that they sang. B'cha yivorich Yisrael leimor yisimcha lakim k'Ephraim v'chmenasha v'yaseim es Ephraim lefnei Menasha. So he blessed them that they sang. By you shall Israel bless, saying, may God make you like Ephraim and Menasha. And he put Ephraim before Menasha. And famously, everybody asks, of all the people, because we do this every Friday night, we give our children, our grandchildren, brachos. It's a very beautiful practice to have, whether they're in front of us, and today we can do it virtually. Every Friday, Baruch Hashem, around the world, in Hollywood, Florida, in New Jersey, in Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, on the gift of technology, with video, I put my hand to the camera and screen, and I give my children, my grandchildren, brachas every week. I get bracha Baruch Hashem, no matter what age. It's still wonderful to receive. And we bless to give like Ephraim and Menashe. Why not Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? Why not David and Shlomo? Why not so many of the other great leaders that we've had? Ephraim and Menashe are relatively obscure personalities. Other than blessing our children in their name, how much do we even know about them? Ask the average person. What do we know? So why Ephraim and Menashe? There's two we've discussed in the past. Maybe because they're the first generation that there's no sibling rivalry. Until now, from the beginning of Bereshis, the creation of the world, Cain and Hevel, Yitzchak and Yishmael, Yaakov and Esav, Yosef and his brothers, Menashe and Ephraim, not only did they get along, but even the reaction. When Ephraim is favored over Menashe, the older brother, he doesn't say, woe is me and why me and how could you and how dare you? He says, okay, I agree. If that's the way it's meant to be, no problem. And therefore, their love and mutual respect, that sense of brotherhood and achdus, that's the bracha we give our children. We give our children, let you have no sibling rivalry. You should have no sibling rivalry. You shouldn't fight. Not my favorite with my less favorite. I'm just joking. None of you are my favorite. You're all my favorite. By the way, that is the secret. When we interviewed the singer Akiva, who may come back this year, just drop that here right now, might have another concert, Akiva Turzerman, the great singer in Israel, who's one of, and I don't want to get this wrong, 11 or 12 or 13, I don't remember. And I asked him in the conversation, in the interview, you could watch it, behind the Bima, which by the way is back and better than ever. So I asked him, how was it? He has very special parents, so I know, because Akiva's sister married my cousin. How is it your parents raised such a beautiful family, incredible children, and you have such a special energy to your family? He said, listen to this carefully. He said, my children treated each of us as if we were their only child. They had 12, I don't remember the number, 13 only children. It's possible to parent that you could have 13 only children, 3 only children, 7 only children. So that's the bracha k'menashe v'Ephraim. Have that sibling love instead of sibling rivalry. Of the same, Menashe and Ephraim are the first to be raised in Golos. Everyone else is raised at the feet of Yaakov. Yaakov at the feet of Yitzhak. Yitzhak at the feet of Avram. Where are Menashe and Ephraim raised? In Mitzrayim. And they didn't lose an identity. They didn't lose an iota of their identity. And that's the bracha for our children who are navigating their Golos, to not lose an iota of their identity. Many explanations why Ephraim and Menashe. Says Rav Shmuel Berenbaum, Perek Memches, we're on Pasuk Chaf. And he says the following. Did I lose the place? Yeah. L'chor tzarech lovin, me'ach she'akov amar ula machiv ha'katon yigdal mimenu, lama omen she'odor zitparach ha'banu ke'fraim ha'chem Menashe, mevarach mevarach ba'ayin yafe, v'kevin she'yish b'chlam ha'sayim mana, yivarach ha'banu yirach ke'fraim she'gidolim yoser. If Ephraim is going to surpass Menashe, then why give a bracha to be like Menashe? If I say 200, 100 is included in 200. If I say Ephraim, Menashe is included in Ephraim. So why also give the bracha to be like Ephraim and Menashe? It says from Shlomo Berenbaum, "Shelechol adam yesh tafkid miyucha v'kochas miyuchad m'avodas Hashem," because everyone's different. Everyone's unique. Ephraim may not objectively be as great as Menashe, but each person has their own assignment, their own purpose, their own mission, their own mandate, to be the greatest they can for themselves. And that's the bracha we're also giving our children. Whether you're an Ephraim or whether you're Menashe, whether you're Menashe, whether you're an Ephraim, be the best version of yourself. Don't be the best version of someone else. Don't compete and compare or try to keep up with anyone else. Be the best version of yourself. And that's the bracha of Kemenashe ve'Ephraim, even though Ephraim should be in theory included in Menashe. That is the Teferes Shmuel. The Divrei Yisrael. The Heiliger Majid Zerebbe. Sorry, different Divrei Yisrael. There's a Divrei Yisrael, it's the Majid Zerebbe. This is the Divrei Yisrael, Rabbi Chezkel of Kozhmir. He says, B'cha Yivarch Yisrael, lo amar b'chem, ela b'cha. Even though he's speaking to Menashe and Ephraim, multiple, he's speaking to two, he doesn't use the plural b'chem, he uses the singular b'cha. B'cha. The Jewish people will bless you, the singular, even though we're going to bless to be like the plural Menashe and Ephraim. Why? Because ki ish echad ba'achtas. Ein hevdal mi kodem l'mi. L'fichach v'yasam es Ephraim l'fnei Menashe, ki Menashe l'yikana be'Ephraim shorei shnei meim echad. Menashe is not jealous of Ephraim. Because when there's achtas, when there's unity, when there's love, when there's respect, then there isn't jealousy, there isn't envy, there isn't animosity, and therefore we're able to all get along one with the other. The Amaros Tahoros, the great Rachman Shufka Rebbe, quotes Rabbi Moshe Leib Sasever. The great Sasever, Rabbi Moshe Leib Sasever, writes, Vayivarchim bayom ahu leimor. Another interpretation. I love this. Vayivarchim bayom ahu leimor. Vayivarchim bayom shebirchim Yaakov Avinu. What was the bracha he gave them? The bracha was, bayom ahu. May you live every day. Don't have anxiety and worry about tomorrow. Don't get lost in the future that's not yet here. May you be blessed to live bayom ahu. Shabirchem Yaakov Avin Shlo Yidagu Daiges Machar Vizeo Vayivarchem Mahu Abracha Bayomahu Sheyisku Lava Lamidas Abitachon Sheyachshav Rak Mashanagel Hayomahu. All I have to know is now. I am where I'm meant to be. Embrace your place. Live that moment. Don't fear the future. Don't worry what will be. Don't have anxiety and angst. But rather live Hayom Vizeo Lemor Derak Mashanagel Lios Hayom Roy Lo Omer Ladaber Bo. Bayomahu leimor. Only talk about today. Okay, plan for, of course, build a beautiful future. But without fear, without worry. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us wherever we are. And that's the same thing. V'eschanen al Hashem ba'esahu leimor. Sheroi levakish ezem Hashem yizborach al midas habitachon. That ba'esahi, bayomahu, is the idea that we can be mindful and intentional. We can be present. We can receive the gift of that moment. Lean in and be present. What was the bracha vayivarchem? Bayomahu. The bracha we give our children, the bracha we ask for ourselves, is to embrace the moment, to be present, to live then, and not live with worry and fear about a future. And then the Torah tells us that Yaakov starts to give his bracha. Perek Memches, Pasuk Chav Beis. He gives his bracha. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, Yehuda, Perek Memches, Pasuk Chav Beis. We're going all the way to verse 22. Ben Puras Yosef Aleayim Banos Sada Ashur. Sorry, that is not where I wanted to go. Bechar Be'Kashi. Perchav Be'. Memchas Chav Be'ez. Go back. still in the bracha, before he turns to Reuven, I apologize. V'anina sati lecha Shechem achar al achecha. He tells, Yaakov tells Yosef, I've given you Shechem achar al achecha, one portion more than your brothers. What happened to Rav Shmuel Berenbaum's vort? That it was only covered, not material things. Now the question arises again. What's Yosef giving Yaakov? What's Yaakov giving Yosef? I'm giving you one more than your brothers. Haven't we seen this movie before? He's giving him one more than his brothers? How'd that turn out? How'd that work out? Why is he doing it again? It's a very compelling question. Why is he doing it again? I can't wait to hear your answers. And why does he have Shechem? Where is Yosef buried? Shechem. And Halavai, we should protect it and enable us to go visit Yosef HaTzadik there, even though our cousins don't let us come. And says Yaakov, how did I get Shechem to be able to give it to you, Yosef? How did I get it? Becharbi ubekashti, with my sword and with my bow. Is that in fact how Yaakov got Shechem? No. Who got Shechem? Levi and Shimon. When they attacked after their sister Dinah was violated, and they created this ruse, and they eliminated Shechem, Hamor, and Shechem, and now Yaakov, who was critical of them then, is now taking the credit now? Becharbi ubekashti, put on my uniform, I took my M16, I took my rifle, I had my knife, Becharbi ubekashti, with my sword and with my bow, I conquered Shechem, and Yosef here now, I'm giving it to you. Zakt Rashi, quotes Unklus, b'tzalusi ubebeusi, with my tefillah, with my prayer, with my heartfelt prayer. Says Yaakov, you know why we were successful? You know why we conquered Shechem? You know why we won that war? Yes, Levi and Shimon heroically were on the front lines. Yes, it was the courage of your brothers. But they wouldn't have been successful without my prayers. Behind them, my tefillah. And why is tefillah called a sword and a bow? Says the Rach Meshivik, according to the Rebbe of Lublin. Sheish lav and lama nirshala tefillah lekeshas. Derech hakeshas hu dekom masha mutach oso adam yosef karvel atzma lamata. As yorah betok of yosef yisala hachet yosef lamala. How does a bow work? The closer, the tighter you pull the string to yourself, the further the arrow will travel. The straighter, the faster, the farther the arrow will travel. What do you have to do? You have to pull the bow closer to you. Similarly, kamochem b'tefillah. What do you have to do? You have to pull. The closer the tefillah is to your heart, the more authentic, the more raw, the more real it is, the closer you pull it to her, then the further, the farther, the faster, the straighter the tefillah will travel to where it's meant to go, to where it's meant to penetrate, to how it's meant to have its impact. Perek Mem Tes Pasuk Aleph 49:1. Vayikra Yaakov, Abban of Yaakov calls his sons and he says, gather around me. I want to tell you, Acharis Hayamim. I want to tell you what's going to happen at the end of days. Says the Rach Meshivka, we're still in the Amaras Tahoros. Hey, Asvu Vagida Lachem. He quotes from the Rebbe of Rojin. Hashikra Eschem Acharis Hayamim. The word hey asvu and asifa, what does that mean? Gather and unite. I want to tell you what's going to happen achris hayamim, says the holy Reginer. What it means is, if you want to bring about the end of days, if you want to bring Mashiach, what do you have to do? Hey asvu. You have to gather. You have to unite. You need achtus. Stop fighting. Stop the sinas chinam. Stop the name calling. Stop critical, stop condemning, stop marginalizing. We need achdus. We need to unite. We need to find common ground. We need to care about one another. Hey asvu va'agida lachem. When is it acharis yamim? Only when, hey asvu, when we can gather, when we will be united, when we will be one. Says Rabbi Sachs, hey asvu va'agida lachem. Yaakov summons his children, wishing to bless them. Gather. The two verses seem to be saying the same thing twice, with one difference. These two psukim, 49:1-2. Hey asvu v'agida lachem, hikavtsu v'shimu. Gather so I can tell you, gather and listen. In the first, there's a reference to what will happen at the end of days, achris hayamim. It's missing from the second. Rashi, following Gemara, says Yaakov wished to reveal what would happen in the end, but the divine presence was removed from him. He tried to foresee the future, but found he could not. This is no minor detail, writes Rabbi Sachs. It is a fundamental feature of Jewish spirituality. We believe we cannot predict the future when it comes to human beings. We make the future by our choices. We cannot obtain the script. The future is radically open. We do not believe the future is still written. We do not believe that the future is written. There is no fate we cannot change, no prediction we cannot defy. We are not predestined to fail, neither are we preordained to succeed. We do not predict the future, because we make the future by our choices, our willpower, our persistence, and our determination to survive. The proof is the Jewish people itself. First reference to Israel outside of Tanakh is engraved on, I'm going to mispronounce this, the Merneptah stele, inscribed around the year 1225 before the Common Era by Paro Merneptah, Ramses II's successor. It reads, quote, "Israel is laid waste. Her seed is no more. It is, in short, an obituary. Jewish people have been written off many times by their enemies, but they remain, after almost four millennia, still young and strong. That is why when Yaakov wants to tell his children what will happen in the future, the divine spirit's taken away. Our children continue to surprise us as we continue to surprise others. Made in the image of Hashem, we are free. Sustained by the blessing of Hashem, we can become greater than anyone, even ourselves, could foresee." So, Achris Yamim, Yaakov's eyes were closed. He couldn't see the future. You know why, says Rabbi Sachs? Because we don't. The future is not set. The future is not written. Our choices, our autonomy, our Bechira Chavshis, we have responsibility. We're empowered, and we have responsibility to impact and influence, to shape and mold that future through the choices we make. We'll end here wishing everyone a meaningful, in addition to an easy, Asara B'Tevis. Let us learn the lesson of Sinas Chinam, to reverse it, only to Avas Chinam, to celebrate the Gula Shlema together. May you stay happy, stay healthy, and stay holy.